Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced at community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on Treaty 1 territory, on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe peoples and the homeland of the Métis Nation. We are your hosts,
Cyrus Sabio
and Kristen Andrews.
This episode of Groundwire is dedicated to the memory of the six men massacred last January 29th while praying at their Quebec City mosque. It was the largest political mass shooting in Canada in 25 years, and the first time Muslims had been killed inside a mosque in North America.
On January 29th, 2017, around 7:52 p.m., a young white man entered a mosque in Quebec City, in Canada, and in the course of a few minutes murdered Azzedine Soufiani,
Mamadou Tano Berry,
Khalid Belkechemi,
Abubakar Tabdi,
Ibrahami Berry,
and Abdelkrim Hassan.
Five others were badly injured: Aymen Derbali,
Saeed El Amari,
Mohamed Kabar,
Nizar Glai,
and Saeed Akjur.
In this episode of Groundwire, we remember the victims of this massacre and also hear from the struggles against Islamophobia taking place across this country.
We start with the headlines. Our first headline looks at the call from the National Council of Canadian Muslims to designate January 29th as a National Day of Remembrance and Action on Islamophobia. Guillory Massa is the advocacy coordinator at the council.
We're calling on the federal government to dedicate January 29th as a National Day of Remembrance and Action against Islamophobia as a way to remember the massacre of the Quebec Mosque, where we saw the murder of six Muslim men while they were in prayer. It's really important to have a day of remembrance as a way to have a yearly conversation about what brought about this kind of action or massacre or this expression of hate. I think, you know, we're living in a time where people are reluctant to talk about Islamophobia and to talk about really what the roots of some of these things are. And we hope that with a National Day of Remembrance, it'll provide a kind of institutionalized opportunity to talk about Islamophobia, to talk about hate, to talk about white supremacy, to talk about the rise of the alt-right, to talk about all of these things as kind of a cautionary tale and a way to move forward.
This call is based on precedent. Every December 6th, there is the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women to mark the anniversary of the 1989 shooting massacre of 14 women at L'École Polytechnique de Montréal. While no decision has yet been made on this appeal, the federal government says it has received and noted the council's proposal.
No, we have support from a number of different municipalities that have declared the day already and are encouraging the federal government to follow suit. The Heritage Canada and also the report that came out of the study on Islamophobia, so the M103 study, made a recommendation or echoed our recommendation to make January 29th a national day. So we're really hopeful that in the next few months or in the next year, this will be something that is on the table and taken super seriously.
The next headline comes from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the occupied territory of the Anishinaabe and the homeland of the Métis Nation.
On Wednesday, January 31st, a Muslim and newcomer from Pakistan had an opportunity to put a question to the Prime Minister during his recent town hall in Winnipeg. The questioner made a point of acknowledging Prime Minister Trudeau's efforts to curtail Islamophobic attitudes and practices within Canada, while challenging him on foreign policy around Saudi Arabia, which he believes is contributing to the repression of Muslims around the globe.
There are children in Yemen being murdered by a very important ally of Canada, and I'm going to name that ally, that is Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. How are we going to address the horrific crimes against humanity Saudi Arabia, who is not an elected government, doing to its own people and its neighboring people? And also, I would like to mention the fact that most of these Saudi-funded horrific crimes are the main reason why most of the people, our countrymen here in Canada, are Islamophobic.
In his response, Prime Minister Trudeau mentioned spending millions in aid to support Yemeni civilians and that his government would aim to strengthen export controls and levels of transparency. However, when addressing the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee a week later, his Foreign Affairs Minister, Chrystia Freeland, indicated a pre-existing $15 billion contract to sell Canadian-made light armored vehicles to Saudi Arabia would be respected, regardless of the specter of human rights abuses by the kingdom.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
I wish we could run away. I wish we could find safety. I wish that we could run away. Oh, I wish that we could find safety. Got a bit
Find Safety by Lal from their album of the same name.
Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at www.groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station. This episode of Groundwire is dedicated to the victims of the January 29, 2017 Quebec City Mosque Massacre and the fight against Islamophobia in Canada. Now it's time for our feature stories.
To commemorate the first year anniversary of the January 29th mosque massacre, where six worshippers were murdered by an Islamophobic white supremacist, communities across Canada hosted vigils to remember the victims and stand in solidarity with the Muslim community. We bring you coverage from the vigils that took place in Winnipeg, Toronto, and Montreal.
In Winnipeg, the commemoration of the anniversary of the tragedy in Quebec was held inside the Manitoba Legislative Building. Close to 100 community members, including political figures at the civic, provincial, and federal level, were on hand to mark the significance of the occasion. Alon Weinberg, programmer with campus community station CKUW 95.9 FM, was present at the event. Here he is speaking with fellow programmer Michael Welsh about what transpired.
So on the 29th, this last week in Winnipeg, along with places throughout the country, was a commemoration of this massacre. And this was held indoors at the Manitoba Legislature. Thankfully indoors, it was a very cold night. And people came from a lot of different walks of life and communities. I don't think it was broadly advertised or promoted, but there was a good diversity of folks. And they had various speakers. There was someone from the Bear Clan. The Bear Clan is a North End based, though not exclusively, an Indigenous led and run community watch kind of group.
I think that regardless of where we come from, regardless of what journey we come from, we need to take a stand in our communities not just to help those who are poor, those who are hurt, but we also need to make an effort to have a better understanding of one another.
One speaker that was at the end that was quite prominent and that's always very inspiring is Shahina Siddiqui, the head of ISSA, the Islamic Social Services Association. She does a lot to bring people together and really universalize the experience of all people who are here, newcomer or not, indigenous or of immigrant background, settler or otherwise. And Shahina did speak at the end. And I think she made a strong message, which is that it shouldn't be up to her and her people and her community to always be holding these kinds of events. I think it's a burnout recipe for burnout for any individual or community to feel the burden of needing to unify people.
I appreciate your messages that we have been receiving this entire month of solidarity, of compassion, and of mercy. As we leave today, please remember that the Muslim community is praying for you, for our country, as much as we pray for ourselves.
I don't know. It was a humbling and mellow and definitely a grounding event.
We will not be silent in the face of fascist violence! We will not be silent in the face of fascist violence!
Over 100 people gathered at Nathan Phillips Square on Saturday to counter Islamophobia and remember the victims of last year's Quebec City mosque shooting. Hosted by Solidarity Against Fascism Everywhere and Toronto IWW General Defense Committee Local 28, it was originally organized to counter a rally planned by Pedagog Canada. Safiya Gahadar, University of Toronto professor and former QP 3907 president, says that Canadians believe that it only exists in the South.
This has escalated, and let's not pretend, you know, because the usual talk that I hear all the time on campuses and with my friends is we're always constantly pointing down to the South, right? We are always looking down South when the shootings happen. When Trump, we are blaming Trump, oh, he started it. No, this has been ongoing. And when we look at the country, the history of the Canada, we have to remember,
no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace.
Communities, they can organize themselves in a way to educate other people and get their community involved. And that's from that we can apply pressure on the government and ask them and demand them actually to actually have some action, right? To pass like policies to, as Black Lives Matter achieved last year, right? Like in Toronto, which is like not having police in schools anymore. So when communities get organized, right, with different groups, that's how we can get things done.
For CJRU, I'm Chelsea Gould.
Important for Muslims such as myself, who feel this kind of shock and disbelief, to remember that this event forms part of a history of violence against Muslims in North America. Our predecessors and parents experienced it and told us about it. We ourselves have experiences in our own life histories. Paki bashing, securitization, the pressure to assimilate and give up our languages or our choice of dress. We know that these histories are subfields of the centuries-long history of white supremacist violence against North American people of color. We know that in 2007, six people were murdered at a Sikh place of worship, a gurdwara, in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. In 2015, nine people were killed at a black church in Charleston. I also remember that broader history today. I'm a professor, I'm not an imam or a sheikh. Especially today, I'm not comfortable with telling Muslims as a group what they should do or what they should not do, even from my insider position, even as advice. So I'll address only one Muslim, myself. It is as important for me to recognize and support the struggles of other oppressed and marginalized peoples as it is to demand recognition of the specific violence of Islamophobia. Solidarity within the Muslim community is most important, but so is solidarity with similarly oppressed people, not only along racial lines. However much the media essentializes Muslims as misogynistic and homophobic, it is important for me to learn from, aid in, and make sure that I'm not myself an obstacle to the resistances of women, queer, and trans people, especially those within my own communities of Muslims and South Asians.
The audio from the vigils in that feature came from Alan Weinberg at CKUW in Winnipeg, Chelsea Gould at CJRU in Toronto, and Gahu Mbaha-Davine at CKUT in Montreal.
The hashtag and website, RememberGen29, was created by Saeed Hassan and Alia Pabani as a way to contextualize this historic moment, but also to insist that what happened on January 29th has not been resolved. They see their social media campaign as an attempt to broaden the conversation about the Quebec City Mosque massacre to exploring systemic issues of Islamophobia and violence in Canada and across the globe. Gretchen King from CKUT in Montreal files this report about the campaign.
As the anniversary of the January 29th Quebec City Mosque massacre was approaching, Alia Pabani and Hassan Syed decided to take action. Both were concerned for the lack of critical media discussions about the massacre and its wider implications in Canada. They set up the Remember January 29th website. RememberJan29.com ask people to post their memories and thoughts about January 29th. Site visitors are prompted by questions such as, where were you on January 29th, 2017? How did you feel when you first heard about the shooting? And does that moment continue to impact you, and how? The website offers a living commemoration and memorial to the victims of the attack. But RememberJan29.com also seeks to address Islamophobia in Canada. This is Alia, one of the site's co-creators, on why she launched RememberJan29.com.
The focus of that massacre and the way that it was spoken about in the media and by politicians was really defining this idea of Islamophobia as kind of limited to hate crime incidences in Canada, and we wanted to be able to expand the discourse around it so that it wasn't all about kind of love and forgiveness, but also to speak about why Muslim lives are undervalued, why could such a shooting happen, and how are our government kind of complicit in that. And I think in order to start having those more complex conversations, it was important to us to kind of open up a space to be able to have honest conversations around how people were feeling about the shooting, and also what people remembered about that day, and also perhaps why they forgot about it. And we thought that an aggregator website would be a good way to do that, because the thing about public rallies and memorials is that, you know, it kind of prescribes the ways in which you remember stuff. It's always about kind of mostly feelings of grief, or prioritizing feelings of grief. And we wanted to actually open a space that was maybe a little bit more anonymous, in hopes that people would be as honest as possible, maybe articulating some feelings like anger or confusion or indifference even.
Bridget Tierney contributed to the site with her thoughts and reflections. This is what she shared.
So my post is called A Puppy in the Clueless World. I felt sick, a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach, like something we try to hide and tuck away in Quebec had exploded. I felt sick that this explosion of misplaced anger and hatred had taken the lives of innocent people and hurt their families in a way I could never comprehend. I felt so much anger at the murderer. I felt sick that he had the power to do this, to hurt people so badly for no reason. I looked for photos and read the names of those who were killed over and over, sending prayers and love to their families for the unnecessary pain they were now forced to endure and all that they had already been forced to endure. I sent love to Muslim people in Quebec and next to me in Toronto and everywhere that were forced to feel unnecessary and constant fear and continued deepening hatred. I stared at the puppy I had just gotten, confused by something so soft and stupid and a world so cruel, which made me still feel sick. I still stare at the same dog and can feel the same sinking feeling.
After the site came online a week before January 29th, more than 150 people posted reflections on where they were on January 29th, 2017. Alia sees RememberJan29.com as only a first step towards having a critical and much needed conversation about Islamophobia in Canada.
In order to be able to have these more kind of complex discussions or expanded discussions on Islamophobia and to be able to really figure out how to confront this complex global issue and to be able to recognize the state apparatus, the Canadian government, that really keeps Islamophobia alive in this country and abroad, we need to resist, I guess, the act of forgetting incidences like this.
To see the website and contribute your own reflections, visit rememberjan29.com. Reporting for Groundwire, this is Gretchen King from CKUT in Montreal, broadcasting from unceded Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabe territories.
From their album, Find Safety.
You are tuned in to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station. Now it's time for our community radio report.
In December, the Noor Cultural Centre in Toronto released a report on Islamophobia in the Canadian mainstream media. Om Salma Ramtula speaks to the authors of the report and also looks at how community-produced media counters this mainstream trend.
Islamophobic narratives interrupt the fairness of media representation. For example, a 2017 study from the University of Georgia found that attacks by Muslim perpetrators received on average 449% more coverage than other attacks. This shows how Islamophobic ideas shape media coverage, resulting in a skewed representation. That was an excerpt from a December 2017 information sheet released by the Noor Cultural Centre, analyzing Islamophobia in the Canadian mainstream media. The information sheet was authored by Aziza and Khadija Kanji. They tell us why it was important to research this issue in the wake of the Quebec City massacre, when it became apparent that violence against Muslims and Islamophobia had been normalized in Canada.
We looked at mainstream media as a site where Islamophobic ideas are both represented. So the Islamophobic ideas that are present in mainstream society are what inform mainstream media, and then the mainstream media is responsible for recirculating these Islamophobic ideas.
We know from a recent survey that was conducted of Muslims in Canada that more than 50% of the Muslim population thought that violent extremism was a serious problem in our community, even though an extremely small percentage, only something like 2%, had actually either directly seen or secondhand heard of violent extremism being promoted in Muslim community spaces. And so it's very important to appreciate the way that the media coverage is so powerful that it not only shapes the perceptions of Canadians who don't have experiences with the Muslim community, but it even shapes the experiences of Muslims ourselves.
The information sheet highlights four areas where we can see disparities in mainstream media coverage of Muslims that are attributable to Islamophobia. These are the visibility and nature of coverage, the extent of coverage, the contextualization of violence, and the explanations of the violence. Khadija and Aziza explain some of these.
The first one was the visibility and nature of coverage. So the day after the Quebec mall shooting, the Globe and Mail devoted just a side panel on the front page to describing the shooting and didn't even note the number of casualties. We dug up the Globe and Mail the day after the Boston Marathon bombing, and the day after that, the Globe and Mail had the majority of the front page dedicated to covering that with the headline, Terror in Boston. And so what we take from this is that acts of violence perpetrated by Muslims is considered as a collective threat to Western civilization. Whether or not we live in the U.S. or Canada, it is more relevant to us than acts of violence committed against Muslims, even if it happens in our very own country. So the last point was the explanation for violence. So Muslim perpetrators of violence are always depicted as parts of as calculating members of global Islamist movements who are motivated by a desire to advance the political agendas of those movements, even when alternative explanations for that violence exist. So Salman Abdi, who was the perpetrator of the Manchester Arena attack, had a history of drug use and difficulty in school. And this understanding, this individual context for him would have likely been provided if he hadn't been Muslim.
The information sheet concludes that consumers of mainstream media should be more critical of the coverage on Islam and Muslims, and also recommend turning to more critical and independent sources of news. I spoke with Ahab Latoyev, who is a longtime community media producer and commentator contributing to CKUT's news program Off the Hour in Montreal. He points to several practices and examples of media coverage, both in the mainstream media and community media, that avoid Islamophobia and give a more generous and fair representation of Muslims.
One thing that will take, I mean, it's extremely important as well, but this one will take more time for it to be effective, is the fact that there is still very little presence in mainstream media of Muslim professionals who work within the media machine itself. I think this is a bit better in community media that allows more diversity in the workplace itself and allows more chances for people who are from different backgrounds with different levels of experience to participate in the making of the media itself. All media organizations need and can really make use of some sort of sensitivity training and awareness training and informing as well to their own staff, to their own workers about Islam, Muslims, the Muslim community, issues related to Islam and stereotypes around Islam in general, to demystify all these things.
To read the full information sheet produced by the Noor Cultural Center on Islamophobia in mainstream media, visit noorculturalcenter.ca. Reporting for Groundwire, this is Ome Salma Rahimtullah in Toronto on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the New Credit.
That's it for this special edition of Groundwire, produced at community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe peoples and the homeland of the Métis Nation.
Music this week was by LAL from their album Find Safety.
We would like to thank all our community media producers, as well as Michael Welsh, Gau Mahadevan, Emily Jovisky, Nadia Hassan, for making this episode possible. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.